news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right? All right!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Hey, wait, there's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
Our shark still has all its teeth. That means it was a bait. Our shark couldn't have killed Overman. Its mother did.
You're talking about the damn shark's mother?
Don't you hear what she's saying here?
Well, I'm listening. Now, if there is such a matter, she gave birth way out to sea and the baby swam through the sea gate that you left open, Lord.
No. Overman was killed inside the park. The baby was caught inside the park. Its mother is inside the park.
A creature alive today has survived millions of years of evolution. It lives to kill, a mindless eating machine that will attack and devour anything. Jaws 3D, the third dimension is terror.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 124.
Dun-dun, 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 dun-dun. 1983's Jaws 3D.
And today happens to be July 4th for American listeners.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be a bit late by the time they hear this, but happy July 4th. July 4th is a very significant day when it comes to Jaws, because this is the day, way back when, in 1975, when young Alex Kintner, played by Jeffrey Voorhees, not Jason Voorhees, but Jeffrey Voorhees, wandered into the water on that beach in Amity, only to be swallowed up by a shark. And that began everything. That set it all into motion. That set the first legitimate summer blockbuster. That's what brought Quint, Brody, Richard Dreyfuss' character, I forget what his name is.
Yeah.
That's what they brought him out in the water to take down Bruce in Steven Spielberg's incredible, superlative, almost perfect film, Jaws. Nice. And, I mean, I'm looking at you right now. You're wearing a t-shirt.
Yes.
With the iconic poster image.
Well, we're in a celebratory mood. You know, mm-hmm. May the 4th be with you as well.
Okay.
I love, obviously, the original Jaws. I love sharks, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first word that I can remember not being able to pronounce as a kid. So as a little kid, I was shark-obsessed. I was saying sark because I couldn't say shark. I up to this day, I have two plush toys mm-hmm. that are sharks. I was begging my parents to buy me shark teeth, which they wouldn't do when I was down in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Florida, the rite of passage for Canadians to go to SeaWorld. that we should practically annex the state. There's so many bloody Canadians down in Florida.
Disney World, and
I love it.
We'd be remiss if we didn't say your first book was...
Plug.
Was a shark book, yeah.
The Man Who Scared a Shark to Death. So if you got some spare coinage kicking around and you're not already... you know, spending it on Death by Umbrella.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Go check it out.
So, I'd rather you buy Death by Umbrella than the Shark Book. That's only because I get a royalty off the Shark
Book.
This
is true. I barely do as well at this juncture. You know, it's getting a little old. But anyway, plugs aside, this
book... But it's a great book, nonetheless.
It is. And so we continue on in the vein of Carcadon Carcharis, the great white shark gnawing on beachgoers here.
Yes, yes.
But a different little spin.
Well, not really beachgoers in this one. I mean, it's funny because sequels, they're inevitability. And when you have a film that was an out-and-out blockbuster like Jaws, as I said before, this is a film that basically solidified the concept of the summer blockbuster. This was a movie, you know, directed by Steven Spielberg when he wasn't Steven Spielberg in all caps, you know. He was still a sort of a... he was a successful director, but he wasn't, you know, it wasn't a guarantee. And, of course, the production of Jaws was set for a lot of problems. The old adage, the shark didn't work. The mechanical animatrix shark just didn't work properly. Do that, they had to use the shark a lot more sparingly than they wanted, than they had intended to do.
Yeah, to its credit as well.
And that's what made the movie great. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was masterful. It was suspenseful. It was scary. It was Hitchcockian. It was restrained, but... it was scary. And it was, like I said before, I mean, our buddy Chris Alexander, you know, writing for Shock Till You Drop, wrote a piece, 5 Reasons Why Jaws is the Perfect Movie. Now, that's Jaws. We're not going to talk about Jaws. We're talking about Jaws 3.
Yes.
We're skipping over Jaws 2, which actually had Roy Scheider return. Much of his reluctance, he really did not want to come back.
Hmm.
And there was no way, the only way, he only came back because of contractual obligations, and there was no way he was coming back for number 3. So, in 1983, they were still milking the cash cow, and they decided, we're going to make a third Jaws. And if Roy Scheider won't come back, if none of the principals from the first movie will come back, doesn't matter. We're going to make the sequel come hell or high water. No pun intended. And not only that, but another great thing about 1983 was that it was right in the, I would say, either the height or just the decline of the 3D boom of the early 80s, where so many movies, particularly third chapters, were coming out in 3D. You had your Friday 13th Part 3, you had your Amityville 3D, and you had your Jaws 3D. So in order to sort of up the ante, they would come out in 3D. Now, Jaws 3 is not looked upon at all in the same esteem as the first one. Where the first one is rated 8 out of 10 on IMDb, Jaws 3 is rated only 3.6. And, it's a totally, totally different beast. I mean, it's really, really hard to compare Jaws 3 objectively to Jaws 1, because if you're going to do so, it's just a terrible movie. But on its own merits, it's a pretty decent flick. What do you think?
Well, I was going to say they got rid of what made everything so suspenseful in the first one, which is delineating clearly what's here and what's out there, i.e. the beach versus the dark water. Here, everything, for the most part, transpires in a lagoon, which is shut off from open ocean, and which decreases the body count, but also, like, contains it in a way that it sort of seems separate. I could never fully get into it. As I would relating to like just a bather or a surfer. I don't know. It seemed odd. That conceit was odd to me.
Yeah, because in the first movie, I mean, you're out there in the deep, dark, wide open ocean. It's might as well be Mars. It's a foreign planet. Mm-hmm. You know what's going on underneath the surface. And you've got this tremendously huge predator that's killing bathers and skinny dippers and, you know, basically making the summer...
unbearable for
Massachusetts, this New England village, Amity. And in this movie, and this one, as you said before, it takes place in a contained area, SeaWorld. And that's very interesting. I mean, for one thing, the fact that this movie actually took place in SeaWorld, the official SeaWorld, as opposed to, let's say,
Oceania, or whatever. Yeah.
Something made up.
Yeah, we are questioning that right off the bat. That's bad PR.
Boggles the mind, because obviously, I guess SeaWorld, I mean, lately, you know, SeaWorld has been beset by a lot of bad publicity. I'm talking about the Blackfish documentary and so on, and all the allegations of mistreatment of their animals, but you know, the old adage, like, there's no publicity is bad publicity. I guess that's what SeaWorld subscribed to back in the 80s and figured, hey, you know what? We get our name out there. Who cares if there's a killer shark roaming our auspices? Yeah. You know, we're going to...
Or if a film depicts our breeding program, a captivity program, failing miserably. Mm-hmm. It just, the whole thing does not reflect well on them. Mm-hmm. Even before the carnage starts, again, they can't keep this baby great white alive for captivity. They're going to show him off as... they say in the movie, the first great white in captivity in wherever, the world, North America, whatever it is. So this 10-footer, the biologist there can't keep the thing alive. It's kaput.
Okay, but you're really getting ahead of yourself because, you know, we have to sort of get into, like, you know, how this movie begins and where characters are and what's happening now. But I do want to say...
Well, yeah, the fact that the 10-footer dies is immaterial because it's really not... the creature that we need to fear and
but
care about.
But you're spoiling the big shocker already, man. This is like you right now saying it's not Norman Bates' mother, it's Norman Bates, you know?
Hey, a 10-foot shark is not going to really cause much of anything.
But I just want to say before we really get into the meat of the matter is that I have seen Jaws 3 before. And when I say Jaws 3, I say Jaws 3, not Jaws 3D, because I never had the pleasure of seeing a screen in 3D. So I saw it, I rented it, I saw it in its 2D presentation, and it was entertaining for a lot of different reasons. It wasn't masterful, but it was entertaining. Mm. They just re-released all the Jaws sequels on Blu-ray, and finally, we have Jaws 3D in 3D. So this is my first time seeing Jaws 3D in 3D. And it's a delight. I love, as you know, I said this on the My Bloody Valentine 3D podcast, I love 3D, and I don't like 3D when it's fake 3D. I don't like this whole, oh, well, let's just show some depth. I want to see shit coming at me. And this movie begins with shit coming at you. First of all, you got the Paramount logo coming right at you. You got the title coming at you. You got every credit coming at you. Dennis Quaid, you know, in your face. Yeah, Dennis Quaid. Leah Thompson, her film debut, the great Leah Thompson from Back to the Future, Marty McFly's mom, Caroline the City.
Forgettable 90s sitcom, yeah.
And another malign movie, which I happen to really, really like, Howard the Duck. Please release that one on Blu-ray, because I love that movie. We got the credits coming at you, and then we see a little bit of underwater life, and we see this large grouper. And next thing you know, we see a shark come into frame, chomps a grouper, and the grouper's head floats
right
us.
Into the
and Chris,
grouper, yeah.
You were sitting next to me watching with those 3D glasses. I saw what you did. I did the same thing. What did we do?
Oh, reached out and grabbed it.
We reached out and grabbed it. That's
abracadabra. I want to reach out and grab it.
That's what you got to do with 3D, man. Yeah. You know, it's not about the depth. I want to reach out and grab things, you know?
But even then...
I want harpoons coming at me so I can duck. We have this in this movie.
Yo, true enough. But even then, a grouper is a massive, massive fish, and they can be as large as 400 pounds. And this 10-foot great white took the thing's head off, and the head floated towards us. Anyway, doesn't matter.
So, I mean, the movie proper starts, and we're introduced to it by a bunch of water skiers who are...
Formation.
They're in formation, and they form a pyramid, and on top of the pyramid happens to be Leah Thompson, who's playing Kelly, and they're all employees at SeaWorld, and they're getting ready for the grand opening of a new, special, state-of-the-art SeaWorld, one that's going to feature an underwater...
Spanish galleon and that they sunk, pun intended, $34 million into, which is unbelievable.
Yeah,
this is going to be a massive attraction.
And it's going to have an undersea kingdom, which people can walk through. It's owned by Louis Gossett Jr. He plays Calvin Bouchard. And under the employ is none other than Mike Brody, played by Dennis Quaid.
Yeah.
Mike Brody, of course, being the son of Martin Brody from the first...
The old sheriff.
So there's our connection to the first. So they're getting ready for the big grand opening. Not only is Mike preparing the water skiers, they're going to be doing these water skiing acrobatics, they're training the dolphins, they're feeding the killer whales. Mike is also finding time to woo his girlfriend, Kathy, and he's waiting for his brother, Sean. Sean from, again... Jaws the first.
The connective tissue from the first. Yeah. And we should say, I guess, Mike Brody's paramour is an important figure at SeaWorld because she is a PhD. She's a ichthyologist or whatever the hell these, whatever, fish doctor. So she's a biologist, and her, you know, it's her job to see to the well-being and the caretaking of all the animals here.
She's actually Dr. Catherine Morgan, senior biologist.
Yes, mm-hmm. And the two of them hang out in this ridiculous bar and where they play shove-off.
Now explain that to me, because they were playing this game of shove off.
I'm familiar with this. Yeah. Where they have like podiums and then they poke one another with like these giant Q-tip things, mm-hmm. and like American Ninja, whatever. Okay, okay. Like they used to try and. That's the only one I'm familiar with, where you try and shove someone off a pedestal with a giant like ridiculous Q-tip. I was not aware that this took place in any bar.
Yeah, because here we are.
People standing and trying to shove each other off a little podium or something.
There was no podium.
Really? It's just with their hands?
Yeah. Here we are. We have this bar.
Miss a thing?
And we have Mike and Kathy and the recently arrived from college cowboy hat wearing Sean. Mm-hmm. And they look to their side and they notice that the game of shove off is being played. And I see this big burly man who is pushed to the floor, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, it's obviously some other, you know, hulking figure that did this to him, Ox Baker or something, God knows what, yeah. Off the top. But no, it's Leia Thompson.
A very slight Leia Thompson, yeah. All 5 foot nothing of her.
And Sean saunters up to her to participate in this game of shove off, and this is basically how they meet cute. You know, this is their romantic relationship.
I was just thinking the liabilities in this bar of someone shoving someone and then falling down, but that's always, you know, my legal mind working. I don't know why I don't have a legal mind, but I was thinking there's probably a reason they don't do this in most bars,
mind,
right?
Yeah. All you really have or know or whatever.
It's a
Lawrence Gowan shout out to our Canadian listeners.
But it's a cutesy way to get the foursome together, yeah. And having fun in this pathetic bar.
But again, I didn't understand this game.
So I didn't either.
To push your other person to the ground by just playing patty cake.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Hey, whatever floats your boat, you know. The puns are coming fast and furious here. It's just getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
We got a lagoon. The lagoon has got these pipes pumping water into it. Mm-hmm. It's closed off from the rest of the bay, so they obviously, the dolphins and whatever they've got there won't just escape back to their natural territory. Mm-hmm. And what we have here is a creature that slips through the gate, mm-hmm. As it's being opened for whatever they are doing. I guess they open and close it at various times to do whatever. I guess get the boats to get out there.
Right.
And again, the aforementioned 10-foot great white, mm-hmm. Comes in.
And there's this park employee by the name of Shelby, and he goes down to do whatever he's supposed to be doing underwater. And unbeknownst to him, he's trapped in that lagoon with this 10-foot great white. Now, Chris, I've gone snorkeling. I've done a bit of, you know, exploring the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. If a 10-foot great white starts swimming my way, I'm going to be scared shitless. You're watching this thing, you're going, what the hell is that, man? This is a 10-foot great white. I mean,
okay, true enough. Everything's relative.
Everything's relative, yeah.
So a 10-foot great white will take like 3 bites to get through you in its entirety, mm-hmm. versus a 30-footer. But
So this 10-foot great white chomps into Shelby, and we see his severed arm floating out of the screen.
Yeah,
out of the
really cool. Yeah.
With the gory severed end coming towards us. So right again, I'm loving this. But that's not the main cause of concern.
Yeah, they explain away this guy's being missing. He's a less than reliable park employee. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he's gone missing for a few days doesn't really rustle any feathers. He's gone. His body doesn't seem to wash up anywhere. So as far as everyone's concerned, things are just normal goings on in SeaWorld.
Mm-hmm. So they're preparing for the grand opening. Bouchard is courting the media. They even get this Aussie to come visit. And this would be Philip Fitzroyce, an undersea photographer.
Yeah.
A bit of a
paparazzo. Of the deep.
Yeah, and he's there to give some publicity to the park, get them some media attention, take some pictures. But he's not that impressed with what he sees. Mm-hmm. Dolphins, killer whales. We've seen it before.
Yeah.
He's almost like the undersea version of Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter. I mean, mm-hmm. he wants danger. This is a man who likes to live on the edge. This is a sexist man, because when he first comes across Dr. Kathy, he says, as he's played by Simon McCorkindale, who's a British actor, but in a very, very fake Aussie accent, he goes, I'm looking for
I can't even do it.
Come on, dude. You can do better than I can.
Crikey, I'm looking for the doctor.
I'm looking for somebody with authority. obviously dismissing the fact that this female may be the one
who is the Lord.
But as the preparations are underway, they realize that this Shelby has yet to make his presence known. He didn't show up at his girlfriend's house. His girlfriend comes all furious. She throws his stuff for whatever reason. I don't know why.
It's completely pointless.
Yeah, it's like, here, you take it. And I'm done with him. Like, what? Why Mike? He's just his boss.
It's just, you know?
And they realize, okay, we better go look for him. So then they go into this interesting-looking contraption called a submersible. It's this yellow submarine.
Yellow submarine.
It's a yellow submarine.
Yeah.
And they go under looking for Shelby. And they see this sunken galleon, and they also see this skeleton underneath. Again, the hand coming right out of the viewing frame. And
yeah, not Shelby's skeleton, should we say, but yeah, part of the Spanish galleon display of, you know, stuff to entertain the masses. Mm-hmm.
But they don't find Shelby. What they do find is a great white shark.
They discover this 10-foot great white on their premises. And after much discussion, obviously their superiors want it killed immediately. But the biologist convinces the Lewis Gossett character, just think of the PR possibilities of having the first great white contained in captivity. We could drag this thing out over weeks as we show video and see how this creature is progressing in, you know, under our auspices. So he finally relents and says, okay, instead of sending the Brit, aka the Aussie, out to just massacre this thing, they figure, okay, let's bring him in, let's tranquilize or dart it, let's bring him in alive, if this were a, you know, Western. And they go out on a mission, they put darts into the thing, and this is a very scary mission. They go out in the dark with the biologist sporting chainmail to protect herself, and obviously the alpha male guy not doing so to protect himself. They go out, they shoot the dart into the thing, and everything seems A-okay with their program. Mm-hmm. They got it in the tank. Of course, they expedite the display, so they get the public in almost immediately before this thing has a chance to eat at all. And they're showing it off in this pool. But the beast is not faring particularly well. It's turning asunder. It flips over. The thing is on its death's door. It's not doing well. And they leap into the tank, try and resuscitate it. I don't know what. How do you resuscitate a shark? Not mouth to mouth. I don't know what the hell they do with it. They're slapping. Yeah, they're slapping it. I don't know what they're doing, but this thing is done for, and in front of all the populace.
Right.
So the poor thing is done, and it seems like so much for that cash cow.
Right. But meanwhile, we have this undersea kingdom where people are dining, walking, etc., in this sort of undersea tunnel. With, you know, it's not both a glass floor, it's a tunnel made out of glass, and you could see what's going on all around you under the sea. And as the park goers are having...
I'd rather be under the sea. Sorry, I couldn't resist. Just endless Beatles references here. Yeah,
Octopus is Garden. Yeah, and the park goers are just having a gay old time, and all of a sudden, boom, what should hit the glass wall of this tunnel? But Shelby's desiccated corpse.
And this causes, which is hilarious. It is an awesome scene.
And this caused a lot of panic. They grab Shelby, they do an autopsy, and they realize, wait a second.
Uh-oh.
This bite could not have been made by a 10-foot shark.
No, the bite radius is like a meter. It's a big fucking mouth.
Because Shelby is fucking flayed, man.
Yeah.
Like, he's got no skin on at least one side of his body. And what they determine is that this is not a 10-foot shark. No, this is a 35-foot shark. 10 feet bigger, mind you, than Bruce in the original Jaws.
Wow, so I did not know that.
Yeah,
so Bruce was relatively realistic when it comes to the great white physicality there. It wasn't like it was 80 foot, or it was a big shark.
It was a 20-foot shark, 25-foot shark, and this is a 35-foot shark. And they surmise that the shark that they had in captivity, the one that's now basically swimming along in shark heaven, is a child.
Yeah.
A spawn.
Yeah.
And the shark they're looking for, these are not the sharks they're looking for.
Yeah.
It's the damn shark's mother.
Yeah.
And that's who they have to go after. And once they determine that the mother is out there and the mother is hungry, now this is when the movie goes to overdrive. Because now you've got Dennis Quaid spending about 15-20 minutes running around like a fucking lunatic, yelling at everybody, trying to get out of the park, get out of the water. He bursts through a Polynesian luau performance. Yeah. He hijacks a golf cart. He interrupts one of these stupid water skiing
demos. Yeah.
Get out of the water! Get out of the water! Get out of the water! Screaming like an absolute lunatic for a good at least 15 minutes.
Hey, maybe he warmed up those pipes in great balls of fire. Who knows? But yeah, he was screaming like crazy. Get everyone! Get out! Get out! Get out! This thing is on the loose. Mm-hmm. And the mama is pissed, going after the water skiers, going after the bathers, going after everybody.
Yeah, she takes a big chomp out of Kelly, Leia Thompson's character.
Mm-hmm.
Even does goes as far as butting up against the underwater tunnel and breaking it, stranding those that are underneath and submerging them in water.
And the tunnel breach is being monitored from the headquarters, the mission control, if you will, of SeaWorld, which you know is high-tech because it's got VHS movie spool reels going around in circles that immediately delineates something that's high-tech in the 80s. Mm-hmm. They have two major problems. They got a 35-foot killer shark on the loose, killing everything in its path, and they got this breach in the tunnel. And the PR person reports to the media there was 40 people in this tunnel trapped with the water coming in. Meanwhile, as we saw, there's maybe only 15. Doesn't
matter. I actually counted. There was about 17 people down there.
Including a guy in this ridiculous, like, Oshkosh Bagosh red overalls. Like, but a great scene. And they're up to their waists. They've got old ladies in the tour group. They're all panicking. And so, you know, luckily, they have safety valves. And they're able to shut her down without the water level encroaching and drowning all these people. So they're up to their necks, as it were. But luckily, they're saved. But yet, while they're doing this impromptu welding to, you know, fix the tunnel, there's still the matter of this pesky shark.
Mm.
What to do with it?
Right.
And what to do with it? I mean, you got to hunt her down.
Right.
And they hatch a plot. For some reason, this was a little bit odd to me, but they figured they could lure it back into the lagoon so they could kill it more easily. Like, why not just go out in a boat and just find the thing? Either way, this is not my idea. I'm not hatching the plan. They go out, the two divers, there's the Brit / Aussie with the bad accent,
mm-hmm.
and his and accomplice, who would have been,
Jack.
Yeah, the Michael Caine in the other movie? I'm not sure. He looked like him.
Well, Michael Caine was in the fourth film, Jaws of Revenge.
Yeah, well, he looked like Michael Caine. Yeah.
Anyway.
And they hatch a plot.
He looked like Michael Caine by way of Quint. There's Robert Darnham as well, yeah.
This is true. And they figure that they're going to, like, this thing is feeding, the size of a city bus, it's feeding on everyone, but they figure they can spritz a little bit of, like, what? Animal blood
fish
into the water.
Oil and
yeah,
blood.
Fish oil.
And clang on some sort of metal apparatus.
Like for omega-3 fatty acids. Yeah,
exactly.
And he's clanging on his camera because they, of course, they want to film this whole thing for the documentary or Shark Week, which just passed.
Mm-hmm.
And this tiny little spritz of blood is apparently enough to attract this fish back into the lagoon where they can corral it and kill it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's their big plan.
Well, I don't want to spoil too much of this movie. I don't want to spoil, you know, how they got the shark, how they killed it, etc. But
are you saying they killed it? We'll leave. No. Okay.
If they killed it. But the one I want to mention is how Fitzroy meets his doom. I mean, that was an incredible scene.
Oh, to say the least. My God. He promises the biologist that he's not going to use these incendiary devices because they don't want it to blow up their coral and their reef and their underground Spanish galleon or whatever the heck it is. He promises that, you know, he's not going to take the explosive devices with him.
Mm-hmm.
He does, but it doesn't help his cause at all.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is still in his hand, unexploded. The shark bears down on him.
And swallows him whole.
Yeah,
and
like Jonah.
But the way it was shot, I mean, it was shot from the inside of the shark, so we get the perspective of the shark's throat and stomach as it swallows this poor Aussie adventurer whole, and you know, you have these 3D shots of the gaping maw of the shark.
Which is so ridiculous, because you've probably seen, like, great whites hunting on YouTube and stuff.
It was so fake.
It was so fake. Like, they usually, when they hunt seals, they grab it and they shake their heads and they dive out of the water and throw the thing, because they're basically toying with it like a house cat does with a mouse. This thing's jaws could not have been, you know, less mobile. Right. Like, this was just a... This thing barely could close its teeth together. Like, this is a super predator of the deep. It could not do anything. Yeah. And it looked like there was enough space for him to swim out of the mouth. This was bad.
You didn't even see him chomp the gastric juices did something to him or something, and that's why he was all, you know, he couldn't escape.
And we won't spoil it, but this diver is in the shark's mouth for seemingly ages.
Yes.
Anyway, just absolutely hilarious.
Absolutely. See. Between Louis Gossett Jr., an Oscar-nominated actor, chewing the scenery, Dennis Quaid running around like a madman, you know, screaming at everybody to get out of the water, between this fake Aussie getting swallowed whole, I mean, this movie is completely off the charts lunacy, and when you add to it the 3D elements of all these body parts coming at you, syringes coming at you, you know, tranquilizer, liquid being shot directly at you, it becomes a very, very wacky, weird bowl of shark fin soup.
Yeah.
It's a bouillabaisse of nuttiness.
Yeah,
and I kind of like it. I mean, yet again, there's no way you can compare this to Jaws. Jaws is towering. Jaws is one of the greatest American films of all time.
Yeah, and the director here does not have the... nowhere, anywhere near the talent that Spielberg does. I mean, few people do. But it's funny when you think about, like, Duel, which came out a couple years before Jaws, which is basically Jaws. You have a giant truck, you know, trying to run people off the road. Like, that's what it was all about. This director I'd never heard of.
Well, it's interesting to say that because, I mean, this was not only was this Leah Thompson's feature film debut, this was also the directorial debut of the director, whose name is Joe Alves. It was his directorial debut, and it was his directorial
finale.
Finale, because that's the only feature he'd ever done.
Well, there were a few pacing issues. There's a lot of blather that wasn't particularly funny or involving, and things took a while to get going in a way that the first one was just masterfully, meticulously paced. But again, we had the luxury of watching it in 3D. If it weren't in 3D, this would be a complete dud.
I saw it in 2D. I enjoyed it for the goofy moments. I enjoyed it for Dennis Quaid's meltdown. I enjoyed it for other reasons. Even in 2D, watching the Aussie get swallowed whole, it's pretty damn entertaining. But in 3D, it takes on a whole other level.
Yeah, so maybe not as fun as, you know, Samuel Jackson's death in Deep Blue, or is it Deep Blue Sea?
Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah. Oh, okay, Deep Blue might have been the computer that plays chess, or whatever. Okay, you know, that was a fun one as well. Anyway, like generally speaking, any killer animal movie, we're going to be there to watch it. Mm-hmm. We love it. This one, you know, a fun one as well. You can't go wrong with killer sharks.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could go wrong. Mm. If you watch Jaws for the Revenge,
In this film, they did say, they did call the creature a proud animal, which is an interesting appellation to bestow upon something that has no conscience or anything. Like, how is it proud or ashamed or anything? Like, it's not like the family pet, which would, like, maybe if it breaks your crystal vase, it could sheepishly look at you. This is a fucking shark. It's not proud or shameful, whatever. Mm. Anyway, very silly. You have Louis Gossett yelling at one of his, I guess, under charges who works the control center, calling him nephew, which is just hilarious. Either that's like a black colloquialism or it is actually his nephew.
I was trying to figure out if that was his literal nephew or that was something.
And then the other person, the partner, who's just basically saying nothing and sitting there manning the controls, just hilarious. Mm-hmm. And the underwater tunnel, the viewing tunnel for this aquarium, well, Ocean Aquarium, looked like a 1950s monster movie. It was completely ludicrous, but fun.
Again, and the scale was enormous.
Yeah, it was enormous. And the yellow submarine, the scale between that and the filtration pipe looked like 100-fold, like, smaller. It is absolutely like the Incredible Shrinking Man or something. Mm-hmm. It was so nutty. This is a wacky film.
Yeah.
And we never even mentioned fucking Captain Ahab and his whale. Like, we never referenced the subtext and the man versus beast and all that stuff, but again, this is not really the place for it. This is more, I just happen to mention it because I'm reading Moby Dick and enjoying it immensely.
Really?
Yeah.
At this moment, you're reading it?
Yeah.
I think you're the only person on this planet that's actually reading Moby Dick for pleasure.
Of course. And enjoying I felt like I had to, because it's like, it's the 1850 novel. You feel like there's certain things, it's so frequently referenced that you had to eventually get around to reading it.
Well, I'm not going to call you Ishmael. I'm going to call you Chris. I'm going to ask you, Chris, what did you learn?
Oh, my God. So many things. We learned that there's a couple people who met their demise, but we don't really see much of them. They seem to be peripheral characters. They are coral poachers, and they sneak into this lagoon in order to...
Under cover of darkness
with like an inflatable dinghy raft, to go out and find this coral. Like, why don't... Can't they just find coral elsewhere? Why do they have to trespass into this presumably guarded
facility
to go do this? But anyway, these two go out, they get killed, but we never see or hear from them ever again. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting moment, is you have these just two... I asked you at first, like, I don't know why I wanted to spoil it, but I was asking you, are these environmentalists? Are they trying to go and like free the whales? And you said, no, they're coral poachers. I'm like, poachers? That is so underwhelming. I thought, okay, these guys are Greenpeace guys. They're going to go in and save the whales.
And ostensibly, they're coral poachers that are seen to become shark food.
Yeah.
And they, you know, we are to assume that they did become shark food. We never got to see their washed up corpses, so...
Yeah, and this is not, like, the largest lagoon in the world. Like, you'd figure it took long enough for, what, Shelby's severed head to appear, and these people are never to be heard from again. Mm-hmm. Maybe they were just completely eaten and digested. Who knows? What did you learn?
Well, what I learned is that no matter how ridiculous a shark attack scene may be filmed or staged or whatever's happening, I mean, if it's a lone bather out at night, you know, skinny dipping, or if it's poor little Alice Kintner out there, you know, wanting to go out for another quick little dip, even though his mom says no, even out enough already, or if it's a bunch of pyramid water skiers, you know, doing some ridiculous show for SeaWorld attendees, if you're going to put John Williams' iconic music to score that scene, it's wonderful.
It
distracts up the tension. It's incredible. So in this movie, when you do see the dorsal fin peering out of the water and the shark is swimming towards its prey, and yes, it is ridiculous and it's shot really, really poorly, but it's scored with the John Williams theme, it's effective.
Yeah, it has the advantage over any other kind of apex predator in that you can't see what it's doing. Not to diminish how fucking scary it would be to have a lion come at you, but at least with a lion, you see it in the distance and go, holy shit, I gotta get out of here, it's a lion, as we saw in that incredible Melanie Griffith vehicle.
Roar.
Yeah. Which is just like, holy shit, a bunch of predatory cats. But this, like the dark water and the combination of not being able to witness what is going on and having something that could attack from beneath, it just adds so many layers of fright. So again, yeah, even if this is cheesy and the jaws are very stilted looking and silly, it brings the goods occasionally.
Yeah. And as I said before, I mean, that score, it will get you every time. It's one of the best scores in movie history.
Mm-hmm.
It does borrow a little bit, I think, from Bernard Herrmann's Psycho score.
Yeah.
But, I mean, those two scores are just incredible. You know, they'll get you each and every time. Another thing I wanted to ask you before we start signing off, you always hear about man-eating shark, right? But have you, a man, ever eaten shark?
Oh, God. At the local supermarket, I did see it, and I thought that was shameful because, as everyone knows by now, we, and by we, I mean mostly the Japanese, are killing off sharks at an unprecedented rate, and I think we've decimated like 80% of their population in that last half century, and I do not want to ever touch the shark fin soup, which is supposed to be an aphrodisiac, especially... This caused a lot of controversy in the local Chinese community here because city council in Toronto decided to ban it, and all these Chinese people were thinking, oh, geez, what are we going to do? We're going to go to a banquet hall outside Toronto to eat our shark fin soup. But yeah, I would never...
Well, they can take Viagra if it's,
it's really necessary. But yeah, I've eaten shark in a sandwich.
Okay.
Shit sandwich. Spinal Tap again rears its ugly head every time, or its pretty head. It's a great movie. Mm-hmm. I've eaten shark. It's delicious. I wouldn't advocate anyone do it. I love these creatures so much.
Well, I have.
Even though they're not even king of the deep.
That would be what?
The killer whale. Mm-hmm. And there's the infamous footage on YouTube, although I want to defend the shark as its advocate. This was a 12-foot female great white, and the killer whale made mincemeat of the thing. So all the wags on YouTube were like, killer whale is the king and everything. But if I were to do a rematch, I would pit the killer whale against a 20-foot, 25-foot great white. Give it more of a shot. So until further notice, it's co-King of the Deep with the killer whale.
Well, how does that compare to Zombie versus Shark and Lucio Fulci's Zombie?
I'm not sure exactly how.
Because that was about for the ages. Yeah. No, I have eaten shark. I'm ashamed to admit it. When I was in Thailand, I dined on some shark steak at a restaurant, and holy fuck, was it good.
Good, yeah.
It was so good that I actually went back to the same restaurant the very next day and ordered the exact same dish. It was wonderful. And I enjoyed it. I just kind of got a kick out of it because I thought to myself, hey, you know, you always hear about manning shark,
mm-hmm.
and here is a man eating the shark.
Yes.
So, you know, my pun happy mind sort of enjoyed that. Star rating for Jaws 3D?
Okay, well, Jaws the first, as evidenced by my shirt, and, you know, we're going to need a bigger boat, and, you know.
Show me the way to go home.
And 5-star for the first one. Yeah. This, geez, pretty corny. Thank God for the incredible Dennis Quaid, just to come in and just charm the hell out of everybody. He's terrific as an actual movie. It's probably 2.5, 3. Mm-hmm. Kind of a fun movie to watch in 3D. It pales in comparison, obviously, to the original. I mean, what doesn't? We like some of the John Sayles fun alligator piranha type movies. They're loads of fun because tongue firmly in cheek.
Like Joe Dante. Well,
Joe Dante, yeah. He wrote it.
Joe Dante
directed it. Yeah, so that stuff's fun.
Piranha 2 was incredible as well. That one, I believe, was directed by James Cameron, of all people.
Oh, well, he's a man who knows depth. He knows depth. And we're going to definitely podcast Piranha 3D in the future, so keep an eye out for that one.
For sure.
But yeah, I would say, you know, 2.75 for this one.
I would say so. I mean, it's about a 2.5 movie, and then in 3D it kind of gets ratcheted up to maybe 2.75. It's fun. Yet again, these superfluous sequels, you know, I mean, there's a reason why Spielberg had nothing to do with Jaws 3. There's a reason why Roy Scheider had nothing to do with Jaws 3. Richard Dreyfuss. Well, Robert Shaw, I mean, he was pretty much, you know, killed off. And I don't think he was alive when this thing was filmed. But whatever. There's a reason why there are no principals returning to this particular one. It was a piece of shit. But whatever. It was a fun piece of shit. So I'm going to give it 2.75.
Jeez, yeah, it makes you realize just what an all-star cast that was. Like, Robert Shaw is so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3.
Yep.
Like, you can't go wrong with those guys here. I mean, Louis Gossett. His character is not overly well developed. He's just basically left to sit in mission control with a mic, just yelling. Not much to do there. The rest of them don't really acquit themselves that great. There's not much to do. Quaid carries the show.
Although I would like to see maybe an extended version of Jaws 3D that would flesh out the character of Nephew just a bit more. That would be interesting, just to find out. Like, is he really Louis Gossett's nephew? Because there was something going on in there in that performance. I could see there was something, some subtext in Nephew that was just aching to get out, but I think those scenes were cut, and we were robbed of, you know, we were robbed of the Quill Poacher's on-screen death, and we were robbed of the character development of Nephew. So, you know what?
And the Coral Poacher's backstory,
too. Now I'm lowering my rating to 2.5, because I want to see more Nephew. So,
well, for more, check out our site, www.reallyawfulmovies.com, updated 2 to 3 times a week for your reading
thrice
pleasure.
Weekly.
Thrice, even that. And, of course, every Friday, new uploads of the Really Awful Movies podcast. Let us know what you think. And if you like what you hear, please write up a review on iTunes. It's really helpful for us to get new listenership, and we'd really appreciate it. And we shall talk to you soon.
Take care.
Dun-dun. Dun-dun. Dun-dun.